This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, September 12, 2008.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
The 08-09 stocks-to-use ratio for corn is 8% and soybeans rallied $2.74 in one day. We'll find out why today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Joe Prasaki from USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Our panelists in studio today are Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities in Hudsonville, Illinois, and Bridget Chenoweth of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's open today's discussion with this question. Does the $3.10 rally and the lead option weekly continuation chart for the soybeans mean an opportunity is on the horizon, Bridget, for producers to make new crop cash soybean sales near $14 out of the field at any time?
You know, I'm not really sure if that's a realistic possibility here in the near term. I think that might have just been a little bit of a fluke going in today, and I don't know if those cash sales are really going to be an option here in the near term.
Kurt Kimmel?
Yeah, it's very light volume. It was sort of a going into option expiration for, say, midday. There was only about 17 contracts traded, and as day went on, it picked up a little bit. A lot of those bids were just bids indeed, but the chart does have that point on there, and it's probably more of a longer-term objective than going into this fall.
And Sherman?
No, I don't believe we're going to have that kind of opportunity here in the short term. I think today you had some shorts that were needing to get out, so I don't believe it's there.
All right. I'm glad, Bridget, that they weren't able to see you because you just furrowed your brow up like, what kind of question is he asking me? But let's continue on with this with soybeans because, really, I want to know. September beans had a high this week of $14.90, a low at $11.63¾, and they finished at $14.90, up $3.10 from last week. November beans at $12.02. We're up 25, so there is a big spread in between those two. So how much of it will close and in which direction?
I think a lot of it, you know, we will see that gap close. I really think that this November contract, it may be a little bit tougher to get a lot of upside potential going forward, that we're going to have some strong seasonal harvest pressure coming in to that contract. But we still have the unknown on those outside markets. If we could, that dollar could continue to decline and the crude market could get a little of a bit of a boost, it could help to pull that November contract back up towards the nearby.
Kurt, on Friday morning, USDA released its numbers for the crop production. It now says the beginning stocks are 140 million. That's 5 million more than previously. Production for this year at $2.934 billion. Do you believe them?
Well, production is probably still a little high. 40 bushels an acre, there's belief that maybe this yields probably another bushel or even two below that. So we'll see as time goes on. But you take just one bushel off, that's going to change that bottom line in a hurry. So the pressure is on the bean market. We're looking at the weather forecast not very cooperative. These beans are awful late. So there's a lot of factors in here that suggest that maybe this October number could be a lot different.
Well, October number could be a lot different. Ending stocks number for next year is at 135, which we might have thought would have been the same as this year, but USDA managed to change this year's ones, didn't they? So we went to 140.
Yeah. I think the ending stocks next year or for this end of this coming year can be lower than what they put because I agree with Kurt. I think the final yield on the soybeans could very well be less than what they put out today with the lateness of the crop. And we still have to worry about the frost potential up north because when we were out at the Iowa Farm Show, you could see and talk to the producers and realize how late the crop is.
Well, most of you, actually, I think all of you said that there was no way a cash sale was going to be made at $14 coming out of the field. So the question then is, will we climb that high at some point in the coming year and have that opportunity?
I think the opportunity is there, Todd. Maybe not out of the field. That's going to be quite a bit to ask for right away. But I'll go back again. I mean, if we have a frost on these beans, then, yeah, we can rally this thing in a hurry.
I agree with him. I think that we could get, you know, some stronger cash sales, but I think it's going to come down in the future. We're also going to have to take a look at that South America crop. And if we have any concerns going forward with that, that could definitely give these soybean prices a strong run to the upside.
Kurt, anything on the global side that you saw in the numbers from USDA that surprised you for soybeans or that you thought was worth mentioning?
Well, really no surprise. They're trying to get a bigger South American crop going, but there's a lot of debate there on their financial situation. And Bridget said, you know, we'll see down the road what their weather producers, and that'll be the key as we go through the winter months.
Taking a look at the numbers as they settled in the corn pit for the week, September, 551.5 top, bottom at $5.16, settlement price at $5.47.5, up 16 cents. December corn at 563.25, up 14.75. Kurt, back to you. USDA numbers on Friday morning seem right?
It's a stair-step approach. We've probably got another bushel maybe to two to shave off yet. We've got to look at demand. We've been at these higher prices here for about 6 to 7 months now, so we'll see if this demand holds up. But probably more than the numbers itself was sort of confirmation that a lot of this corn in the northern belt still in the milk stage yet, and so that's going to push the clock here as we go over the next 30 to 45 days.
USDA says we'll raise a 12 billion bushel corn crop at 152.3 bushels to the acre. How much lower will it go? I think risk management says a lot lower.
I think that's definitely in the cards, yeah. On the drive up here, coming up Route 49 through Hoopston and Sydney, you could definitely see the nitrogen that has been lost. Like Kurt said, the crop in the north is very late. We could definitely see this crop come below 150, I think.
Yeah, over time and through here, it's just going to be fighting the clock. It's a time scenario here where we'll probably get down to 150 in the next report, and after that we'll just see how this fall weather unfolds.
And as you take a look at the numbers, you agree that this crop was a big crop going to get smaller now?
I do think it's going to come in smaller. I think, you know, there's a lot of holes out there in those corn crops when those combines start rolling and we get a strong grasp of what these yields are really coming in. I think we may be a little bit disappointed.
Kurt, last year stocks-to-use ratio at 12.3, this year at 8%. What's that tell you?
Well, it tells us even though we've got big production, we've got big demand. So it's going to be real important to keep this big production coming as to satisfy the demand. Any type of drawdown in production, you know, this demand's going to go, wow, I'm going to have to step forward and buy it. So the tighter, the smaller stocks to use ratio is very critical to watch.
Which of the numbers for the demand side surprised you, if any at all? Sherman, we were at 5.2 for feed and residual. That was down 100 million. Ethanol stayed the same at 4.1.
It might be the ethanol number. I could see maybe where they could pull that back down a little bit in the future.
And do you think ethanol can maintain a 4.1 billion usage rate?
I think it could. I don't think it was, too unrealistic for right now. So going forward, as he said, you know, it may come down a little bit, but I don't see any major drastic cuts in that number.
Bridget, they say the cash average cash price for the year range from 5 to 6, but the midpoint's 550. We're not too terribly far off of that at this point. It looks like they're right on the money. How much of variance do you see from one side to the other on the cash price for producers over the coming year?
You know, I think it just kind of depends on the area they're in and going forward and, you know, where they're really going to come in at between that, as you said, between that $5 and $6 range. We aren't that far off, and I think we could kind of hold our ground in that area.
Kurt?
Well, we'll stabilize going through this fall. We're going to have some harvest pressure. We're going to have end users come forward and try to gather some inventory. But one thing we got to consistently watch is the investor confidence level. We've done some major damage here over the last 2-3 months on some of these so-called financial houses. There's going to be some that go down, and if they have to liquidate, it's going to put pressure on the futures along with keeping cash or buyers on the sidelines for a while.
Is this right in your opinion? So that We had on Friday a reason fundamentally to move higher, but and move higher not only on Friday, but potentially for a longer term through the coming months, but that the outside markets are just as important as the fundamental marketplace.
Oh, I think they are most definitely. I mean, we needed a few things today. We needed a friendly report. We got that. We needed a pullback in the U.S. dollar, and we did get that. So that should help bring a little bit of confidence back into some of these funds. But if the stock market or some of these outside influences would change and these funds need to liquidate, then that could definitely bring the market back down.
You agree here?
Absolutely. I 100% agree. I think we're going to have to keep a close eye on the crude oil market. That crude oil is getting down to $100 a barrel. That could be a psychological support, and we could see some people come into the market and start buying a little bit, and that could be friendly to commodities here in the short term.
Well, therein lies the crux of the problem, I guess. What happens if these things begin to fail, really, on the financial side? Despite the fact that we look like we have a fundamental market that should go higher, and how do producers position themselves to protect themselves? And maybe we can start and work our way across with everybody. Bridget?
I think you really just have to take advantage of these higher prices when we get them and protect that downside. I know we're utilizing, you know, some option strategies so that you still have some upside potential, but that floor is still protected.
Yeah, clarify for me. What do you consider higher at this time?
As far as making additional sales?
Right, corn and beans both.
You know, I haven't really put an exact number on there. If conditions are absolutely perfect for beans, if we get some serious weather issues down in South America, we could put, you know, a 2 in front of the soybeans.
Well, this is a time frame where a producer might want to consider futures or options, as Bridget mentioned. If you want to hang on to your cash inventory in the elevator or bin, you can buy a put to put a floor under. That way, if the financials fall apart and the futures go down, you can participate that way. Or else you can go ahead and sell your cash grain and get your money, lock it in, replace with call options.
Yeah, I agree with that. On the corn side, I'd be looking to use puts if we can get a rally in that $580 to $620 area. The bean side, if we can get back up close to $13, that would be nice. And there I would probably push more cash sales because puts for the soybeans are a lot more expensive.
Turn your attention to the wheat market very quickly. September wheat this week, a high of 740 and three quarters, a low at $6.98, a settlement price today at 703 and three quarters, off 26 cents from last week. And July futures settled at $7.63.5. They were down 38 and a quarter cents from last week. USDA agrees and says that on around the globe, there are a lot more bushels of wheat today than there have been for a very, very long time. Do you think that their 670 to 780 range for cash prices of wheat is too high at this time?
Well, if we have corn and beans firm or stay firm here, it could help support the wheat. But you're right, and it's in the wrong places of the world. What I mean by that is in the Black Sea and some of these other countries that are competitors to us. But when you look at the U.S. domestic market down the road, though, we're hearing a lot of producers pushing the pencil. They might shy away from some wheat next year.
You think you're far enough south? Are we going to put soft red winter wheat in?
There will be some. I don't think you're going to get the extra acres like you got this past year because the price of wheat has just come down so much, and you got a basis that's $1.50, $2 under the futures. That's not going to really entice anybody to plant extra acres, but the normal acres will probably come out. In our neck of the woods, you'll be looking to plant wheat and then put double crop beans behind it, and it is a little bit cheaper to put a wheat crop out. So I don't think you'll lose a lot of acres, but I don't know if you're going to gain any extra ones.
Bridget, you're going to take a defensive stance on wheat acres you put in the ground this year?
No, I mean, I 100% agree. I think that, you know, the numbers are going to be average. I don't think they're going to be additional wheat acres. The prices just aren't out there to entice the farmers to plant those additional wheat acres.
So if the additional acres aren't there and the prices aren't there, are you going to protect the acres you put in the ground? I mean, are you going to take a stance in the marketplace to protect the current price? Do you believe it's going to go lower is really the question.
Yes, I do think it's going to go lower. I think as long as corn and beans can kind of hold together, that should help to, you know, limit some of the downside risk that we could possibly see in wheat. We're going to, you know, we're possibly looking at making some 09 wheat sales just to get those locked in going forward.
Taking a look at some of the other numbers that came out this week, live cattle futures at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange from the CME Group. October contract had a high of $103.50, a low at $101.35, a settlement price at $102.15, finished down 80 for the week. September feeder cattle at $109.90, down $1.22.5. October lean hogs for the week, $69.95 on the high, the low at $66. A settlement price at $66.10, finished $3.32.5 lower. Just a couple of reminders, if you'd like to listen to this program again, you can do that on your website anytime you'd like. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. And starting next Monday for the closing market report, we'll go from a half hour to a full hour. And our first guest will actually be the guest that we have on the program today, Joe Persaki of USDA NASS. Be sure to tune in for that first harvest hour of the closing market report Monday at 2:06 p.m. Central Time, right here on this radio station or at willag.org.
I'm Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Wet weather returns in Illinois in September after a dry August. Last week, what was left of Hurricane Gustav moved slowly through Illinois, depositing 1 to 4 inches of rain across the state. Some additional rain fell this week, bringing the statewide total for September to 2.9 inches. It's probably too late for most of the corn and soybeans, but it sure helped the yards. Soil moisture reserves are usually at their lowest point by early September, but not this year. The Water Survey sampled soil moisture from 19 sites around the state on September 3rd and found the soil moisture down to 6 feet was well above average for this time of year. Cool weather accompanied all the rains this week. Temperatures were 7 degrees below normal for the state. The average highs ranged from 68 in northern Illinois to 76 in far southern Illinois. Average lows range from 47 in northern Illinois to 61 in southern Illinois. The latest National Weather Service forecast calls for 2 to 6 inches of additional rain to fall across Illinois this weekend as the remains of Hurricane Ike move through the state. The heavier amounts are expected to fall in southern Illinois at this point. Highs will be in the 60s and 70s and lows in the 50s and 60s. For the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign, I'm state climatologist Jim Angel.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, September the 12th, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio today are Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities out of Hudsonville, Illinois, Bridget Chenoweth of AgriVisor in Bloomington, Illinois, and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Our guest is joining us from Washington, D.C., where he works for USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Joe Persaki, thanks for joining us on the show.
Well, thanks, Todd.
Well, let's start by what the feelings were this morning in lockup when you announced these numbers. Were there anything that most people were talking about off the top of their heads?
Yeah, when we get in, you know, because we went in last night about 11:45 when we start the lockup discussion. And, you know, the thing is we've got a pretty good handle on the years per acre, and I think that's all your in-studio guests will agree that the years per acre, that's we've got a pretty good handle on. And then it comes down to grain weight. And the things that, you know, that when we looked at it, we look at the data from our, you know, one of our field samples, is that it looks like the kernel row length, it's a typical year. Where we're getting killed is the diameter, what we call a volume measure, where we do the length and the diameter. And it just seems like the diameter is not there. And then the question is, and I think you guys have mentioned it too, is, you know, is it too late? You know, will the crop fill out or not? And that's the question that's in our minds. Right?
So that's the question that's left in your mind. But at this point, did you get good ear weights this time around, or roughly speaking, or
well,
still?
That's the thing. You know, the your in panel or in studio panel, they're saying the same thing that we're seeing is this crop was way behind, and normally we would get, you know, actual live, harvested, you know, that the crop is mature, harvested, that we would send samples to the lab for testing, and we are still getting very few of those. So we're still modeling a lot of the grain weight based on kernel row length and the volume measurements of the plant, of the ears itself.
And so you're basing the larger this would be the second largest corn crop on record, mostly on the number of ears, as opposed to plants, I think, but number of ears.
Right, because think about it, it's fruit times fruit weight. And so, you know, that fruit weight is the big question still right now.
Well, the last time around, I know we talked a great deal about number of blisters that were there and the idea that this crop could get bigger. Apparently, August was not very kind to the corn crop.
Well, that's the thing. It's just not showing up there. You know, we're just not seeing it in the data that we're seeing as well.
Where did you see the most change? I saw Iowa was down 3 bushels to the
right. Well, you go pretty far east. You know, the Eastern Corn Belt. Ohio was pretty tough on Ohio from August to September, and then Nebraska was kind of tough yield wise too as well. And Iowa's big. You know, they're about 20% or so of the crop ish. And they were down a bit, too. So in Illinois was no change, but Iowa, you know, you take Iowa, get Iowa, Nebraska, and Ohio, I mean, that's where the bulk of it was.
Joe, this is Sherman Newland. I farm for a living also. Do you feel like you have compensated for the loss of the nitrogen that we're seeing out in our fields, the wet holes that are got drowned out into the spring, and same with the way with the beans, the shortness of the beans, the lateness of the beans? Do you feel like the yield projections you're putting out is compensating for those?
Okay. Let's you know, one thing at a time. With the corn, with the, you know, the pots or whatever you want to call them, the potholes or the washout areas, we feel we've got a pretty good handle on that, because when we went back and did a bunch of re-interview work after the floods in the 6 impacted states, so we adjusted acreage, if you remember, going into the August report. So we feel we've got a pretty good handle on the acreage. And then the whole issue about, I think you mentioned about the nitrogen leaching then, right?
Yes.
That question came up in lockup as well, because our Illinois director, I don't know if you guys know Brad Schwab over there in Springfield, he made that comment too about, with all the leaching, you know, the plant's fighting itself right now. It's trying to fill out, but there's no nitrogen and it's killing itself. So that's the thing that we're concerned, because we're doing the best we can with the data we have right now. And until you actually get those live field weights coming in, that's the key. On that. Now on beans, the real issue is, we call it it's pods per acre, or pods per 18 square feet. It's not pods per acre, but pods per 18 square feet, and that's the lowest we've had since 2003, and that's really what's hurting this soybean crop. There's just not enough pods out there, and they're a little bit heavier. What we're seeing, you know, based on our observations, but there's just not a lot of them. Comparative, like the last couple of years.
Joe, you mentioned you had a handle on the potholes and you adjust that. Could you briefly explain how you sort of come to adjusting that number?
Yeah, what we did is with the extra work that we did in for the objective yield survey, we did an extra 25% samples in the 6 states: Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Missouri, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. What we did is, with that survey, we go back to the farmers, and we've got, you know, aerial photography, and it's like, okay, can you tell us, you know, in these areas, what's missing? You know, like in these fields, this was a 100-acre field, what do you think's in there now? So we went back to, you know, an extra 25%. So we adjusted, we did some moving around of acreage in August. Now, the thing is, the big question is, it's in the back of, you know, my head and back of your head. Well, what if the guy doesn't know? What if it's in the backside that he can't see? That's the thing we won't actually see until the combines start rolling. Now, during our objective yield work, if the farmer didn't take out the acreage, if our numerators had a plot that landed in one of those blank spots, we would count blanks for yield on that.
I had a question for you. At Agribiser, we were kind of mapping out some of these corn ear weights, and we see that 2008 comes in well below the average and well below the past 5 years. And as a tendency, the USDA has tendency to put the ear weights above average, and then we kind of see a little bit of decline. Do you think there's very much possibility of a decline going forward in these ear weights?
Yeah, then that's a good question. I don't know. All I can tell you right now is that volume is not there on the ears. Okay, that's what I can tell you. That's a fact. What's going forward, I don't know. I always tell people, it's not 2004. In 2004, we had light ears in September, but then the plants added more weight. Is it the same kind of year? Not exactly, but I can't tell you what's going to happen over the next month.
So could you recap for us, Joe, very quickly, what it is that you normally would get out of the fields at this time of the year for corn and for soybeans, and what you're missing this time around because of the lateness of the crop?
If this would have been like a normal year, we would have had many more. We have different stages when we look at the plants in the field, and we would have had a lot more samples sent to the lab at this time. I mean, we're probably a quarter of the normal that we would have sent to the lab at this time. It's just late, so we don't have that lab weight data. You know, the real data from this crop. All we have is when we measure the length of the kernel, you know, kernel row length, and the diameter of the ears. That's what we have. We're just missing that piece with the actual lab work. And the same thing with soybeans. We don't have the actual lab work on that because the crop's just behind.
Since you have row length, what do you have an average on that? And was tip back a problem, do you think?
Well, you gotta bear with me, guys. I'm digging through the databases here.
Okay.
The kernel row length, we have a number of 6.6. Well, that's no different than last year. It's just it's a little bit bigger than 05, 06. I mean, it's very similar the last 3 years. But then when you look at the volume, you know, when I'm talking about the volume, when you look at the diameter, that's where we're missing it. We've got long ears. It could be longer. They could be longer if we wouldn't have had the tip back like in 04. But it's just not there. The diameter's not there. And I think it's the same thing you guys and your field people are saying, too.
So you're saying 6.6, that's 6.6 inches on average?
Right.
Well, what do you expect you'll see in the October? At least not for the numbers, but what do you expect you'll find in that you'll be able to gather up that you haven't this time? Will we be far enough along that you'll have?
Yeah, we'll, because we're about, you know, if you look at the weekly crop progress, we're about 7 to 10 to 14 days behind, depending what state you're dealing with. So when we get to October, it's going to be like a more typical, you know, kind of in between September, October. So we would be able to get more actual field weight coming out.
Well, we'll look forward to it as we always do.
Well, thanks a lot.
And we'll talk with you again on Monday.
Okay, excellent.
Okay, thanks much, Joe.
Bye-bye.
Joe Prusaki is with USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, joins us from his offices, actually his home tonight in Washington, D.C. A final word from you, Sherman Newman.
It's going to be a wet fall with all the rain coming in. That's not going to help the situation at all. The corn's going to come out of the field awfully wet, so let's get our dryers ready to go.
Kurt Kimmel?
We mentioned puts and calls, and initially you go, ouch, they're pretty pricey, but there are some creative strategies out there to cheapen those up.
And Bridget Chenoweth.
Absolutely. I think you've got to take advantage of any price rallies that we get and protect that downside risk going forward.
Our thanks to our guest in studio and to Joe Prusaki for joining us on this September the 12th edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Be sure to visit our website at willag.org. Have a good weekend.